All right, here we're beginning at the beginning of Masechet Chagigah, the Masechta that finishes off Seder Moed. The theme of the Masechta, as the title says, is Chagigah. The Torah gives us instructions about what we know as the Shloshet Regalim, the three holidays, Chag HaMatzot, Chag HaShavuot, and Chag HaSukkot, the three holidays where there's a requirement for one to be Oleh LeRegel, to go visit Yerushalayim, to come to the Mikdash. The Torah in Parashat Mishpatim and Perek Chav Gimel tells us Shalosh Regalim Tachog Liba Shana. There are three regalim that we have to celebrate during the year. And then afterwards it says Shalosh Pi'amim Bashana Yere'eh Kol Zruchucha El Pnei Adon Hashem, that for three times a year you have to appear before Hashem. And earlier on in a pasuk by Chag HaMatzot it says V'lo Yera'u Fanai Rikam, you cannot come up empty-handed. In Sefer Dvarim, in Parshat Re'eh, we also have a list of the Shloshet Regalim as well. And there, we have an additional requirement of V'samachta lifnei Hashem Elokecha, ata uvincha uvitecha, avdecha v'amatcha, v'levi asher v'sherecha, v'ger v'yatom v'almana asher v'yakirbecha, v'makom asher v'char Hashem Elokecha l'shaken shmo sham. So the requirement of Simcha. And then, V'samachta b'chagecha, Ve'aita ach sameach, right, the requirement that one be happy on the holidays. And then we have a similar pasuk that we found in Parshat Mishpatim of the requirement that you always come up to the Mikdash, which is Shalosh Pi'amim Bashana, Yere'eh Kol Zechurcha Et Pnei Hashem Elokecha, V'mo'akom Yisher Yichar B'chag HaMatzot, U'v'chag HaShavuot, U'v'chag HaSukkot, Velo yera'eh et pnei Hashem reikam. Ish, kemat nat yodo, kibirkat Hashem lukecha, asher natanach. So over here you have a requirement. Seems to be pretty simple. It's a requirement that you appear, you come to the makom asher yivchar Hashem, the place that Hashem has chosen, three times a year. There are a number of things to focus on here. One of them is the usage of shlosh pe'amim and shlosh regalim. Why is it sometimes called pe'amim and sometimes called regalim? That will have nafkaminot because we will focus heavily on the regal aspect, the ability for one to reach Yerushalayim by foot, be able to walk up to the Makom HaMikdash. Number two is, it says, Lo yera'eh et pnei Hashem reikam. You may not appear in the Mikdash empty-handed. In addition to that, it says, Ish kemet nat yodo, that you bring up, based on the blessing that Hashem has given you, you bring up a gift to Hashem. And then there's also a requirement of lachog, to celebrate. And there's a requirement to be bisimcha. All these in the Torah are undefined terms. They're not terms where we have a specific requirement of what to do. Masechet Chagigah basically is the Torah Shebaal Peh's way of defining these terms and telling us how they manifest themselves in the holiday, which is the requirement of lo yera'eh et pnei Hashem reikam, to not appear before Hashem empty-handed, is what we call the olot ri'iyah. Chazal, in each of these instances, says there's a korban associated with each of these terminologies. So lo yira'eh, it's penai reikam, that I may not come up empty-handed, says I must come up with a gift. That gift is a korban for Hashem. What is that korban for Hashem? Olot ri'iyah. That is an olah that is brought as the ri'iyah, ri'iyah from lo yira'u, it's penai reikam, that you will not see me empty-handed. So that appearance now comes with an olat riyah. In addition to that, there's a requirement of lachog, to celebrate. Again, Chazal defined lachog as a korban, shalmei chagigah, the requirement to bring up shlamim that are associated with the holiday. There's a requirement only to bring one shlamim that is associated with the holiday, a shalmei chagigah, that can be brought on the first day. Or if you don't bring it on the first day, then it can be brought on subsequent days. We'll see today how exactly the makeup works when you don't bring it on the first day. The other item that we mentioned was simcha, v'samachta lifnei Hashem Elokecha, that you have to be happy, you have to rejoice before Hashem. Again, Chazal defined that based on the pasuk later on in Sefer Dvarim, v'zavachta shlamim, that the only type of simcha, or the only thing that is simcha, is bringing shlamim or basar shlamim. Therefore, there's something called shamei simcha, shlamim of simcha. So the Masechta here will deal with these korbanot, or these definitions of what surrounds the Shlosh Regalim. The Regalim, again, require Ri'iyah, Yira'eh. They require a simcha, and they require a chagiga. And all of these items, now Chazal tell us, are manifest in korbanot. And so we will, in the first half of the Masechta, deal with the korbanot and that which surrounds the korbanot. For instance, the interplay between korbanot nidava and korbanot chova. These are obligatory korbanot, at least the chagiga and the ri'iyah. The simcha may not be an obligatory korban. It may be optional. You may be able to then discharge your obligation through korbanot nidava if you're bringing other korbanot. So the interplay between those two is important, between the chova and the nidava, which we'll see in the Masechta, how they play together, and then on which days during the chag you can bring them. Is it only on Yom Tov? Maybe you can't bring it on Yom Tov. Maybe only on Chol HaMoed. That's a machloket that we've seen in the past. We'll see again here about whether you can bring these korbanot on Yom Tov itself. And in addition to that, when the person discharges their obligation, what is the exact obligation? What is this shi'ur? What is the amount that one brings in order to discharge their obligation? Is it a kol shehu, or is there a minimum amount that one needs to bring in order to discharge the obligation? That might already be in the realm of dirabonon, about the minimum. The mishur may do right, though, may simply be kol shehu, any amount, as long as you fulfill your obligations, which Torah Shabbat tells us is manifest in korbanot. The other shirim might be dirabanan, it may not be midoraita. So all of these issues, or these items, are going to be taken up by our Masechta, and therefore the Masechta begins with who is obligated in these items. I mean, now here I just listed out a number of chiyuvim that derive from the psukim. Who is obligated to carry out those items, and can you separate between them? Maybe Chagiga is different than Re'iyah, and that's different than Simcha. That means that each one of them might have a different requirement, and therefore different people might be obligated in each of them. So here our Masechta begins. Hakol Chayavim Biriyah. Everybody is Chayav in Olot Re'iyah. You may not appear before God empty-handed. It's very easy to understand that the purpose of the Regalim to be Ola Regel, to come up, is to be in the presence of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, but each one of the holidays is also a thank you to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And saying thank you to God, you don't come empty-handed. When you come to say thank you, you bring a gift with you to say thank you. And this is what the Olat Re'iyah is. When you appear there, you must also be bearing something that reflects the fact that you understand the reason that you're here is to commune with God, that you're there to say thank you to God and acknowledge what a Kodesh Baruch Hu has done. To simply show up is not going to be enough. To show up, you also have to then provide a korban. That's not so simple, what I just said, because if you look in Rashi, Rashi says, Kol chayavim b'riyah, everybody is chayav in riyah. Rashi says, tzirchim lehitra'ot b'azara b'regel. What's the obligation of riyah? Is to appear in the azara during the regel. So Rashi says here that the Mishnah is speaking about the simple going to the azara, appearing before Hashem. There are others, the Yerushalmi especially, who says that our mission is speaking about the korban ri'iyah. Kol chayavim b'ri'iyah doesn't mean to appear. Everybody is here to appear, but everybody is obligated to bring the korban, the olat ri'iyah. So therefore, you have here a tension in the Mishnah of whether we're just speaking about getting to the azara, appearing the azara, or we're speaking about korbanot. Obviously, that's a nafkamina. If you're talking about korbanot in the Mishnah, that means the possibility that even though you're not obligated to bring a korban, you still may appear, or you might have an obligation to appear in the mikdash. We could bifurcate the din between the obligation to be present and the obligation to bring the korban. Or, if you say it's talking about riyah, then if you don't have to appear, obviously you're not going to bring the korban, because the korban is an accompaniment to your appearance. Tosafot over here says that the Mishnah is talking about both of them. Both the riyah appearance and the korban mean that they are joint at the hip. You cannot separate between the two issues. And if you look at Rashi on Daf Dalet Amud Bet, there Rashi himself says that the ri'iyah that we're speaking about here is the ri'iyah of bringing up the korbanot. What forced Rashi over here to say that we're talking about appearing and not bringing korbanot? That might have to do with the issue of who is mentioned in the Mishnah. One of the people that's mentioned in the Mishnah is a katan. Now a katan is not a bar chiyuva in terms of bringing korbanot. So if we're talking about korbanot, the katan is not relevant to start with. Why would the katan be relevant whatsoever if it's about talking about korbanot? To say that the katan is exempted makes sense when you're talking about riyah, appearance, showing up there. That the katan can do. By talking about bringing korbanot, the katan is not a bar chiyuva with regards to that. And therefore, that might have been what pushed Rashi to explain the Mishnah based on riyah of appearing there. Even though both might be true, the focus on the Mishnah of riyah and of appearance is because of the mention of the katan. So now, kol chayavim b'riyah chutz. except for. So now we have the grouping Cheresh Shoteh V'Katan, a person who is a Cheresh, which will, on the second half of today's daf, will define what is a Cheresh. A Cheresh has three different definitions in Chazal. A Cheresh can be someone who is mute, but can hear. A Cheresh can be someone who can speak, but cannot hear. And a Cheresh can be someone who is not Midaber and not Shomea. He doesn't do either of them. That's what the Gemara is going to attempt to understand, which one of those is being mentioned in our mission over here. Shoteh is someone who's not of sound mind. The exemption from the mitzvot makes sense. A katan, who's not a bar chiyuva, therefore is not obligated to participate in the ri'iyah. Okay, v'tumtum v'androgynous. Those two are accepted. A tumtum is someone we cannot define their sex because we don't know. And a androgynous is someone who has both sexual organs, and therefore we don't know again whether they're male or female. Vinashim, and women. Women are exempted, which is what affects the tumtum and androgynous, because the tumtum and androgynous, since they are questionable whether they're man or woman, if a woman is exempt, then they are also going to be exempt because of that. Va'avadim, sheina mishucharim, slaves that are not freed. Slaves that are not freed have an Eved Knani, who is not free, has a din in mitzvot, like an isha, like a woman. But you might have thought differently because they are men. But no, they're included like women, and therefore they are not included. Hachiger, someone who is lame. Ve'hasumas, someone who is blind. Ve'achuleh, someone who is sick. Ve'azakein, and someone who is elderly. Umi, she'enu yachol alot biraglav. And anybody who cannot walk on their own, up to the regal or up to the migdash. So over here, those latter people in the list are all affected by this. Obviously the chiger, the chole, the zakein are all affected by the fact that they can't walk up on their own feet to the migdash because they need some sort of aid or a way to get up there. They can't do it on their own, and that's what maybe is poter them or makes them not chayav. Suma, we'll see in a second why the suma is exempted. Again, the Gemara is going to deal with all of these. I'm just trying to give you a broad perspective on what's happening over here. Ezu katan. Who is a katan? So this is an interesting definition. A katan is very easy to define because a katan is anyone below the age of bar mitzvah is considered a katan. He's a minor, therefore he is a katan. But the Mishnah here is seemingly asking is not a katan in terms of above or below bar mitzvah, but a katan in terms of the mitzvah of chinuch, which is kol she'enu yachol lirkov al ktefav shel aviv. Anybody who cannot ride on the shoulders of his father, ve'alot mim Yerushalayim nahar habayit, and go up from Yerushalayim to Har Habayit, divrei Beit Shammai. Beit Shammai says the threshold by which a katan becomes chayav mitzad chinuch, is from the age at which they can ride comfortably on their father's shoulders from Yerushalayim up to Har Habayit. It might also reflect on the father. The father must be able to walk barefoot from Yerushalayim up to Har Habayit, because you're not allowed to wear shoes when you're up on the Har Habayit when you go into the Azara. So it also probably reflects on the father as well, that the father can do this. That's Beit Shammai's definition. Rashi notes over here, Yerushalayim Lazara, which is technically where you're going to go. From Yerushalayim to the Azara is where you need to end up. Yerushalayim to Har Habayit is not sufficient. It might be that the mission only mentions Har Habayit because it's the most difficult part of the climb. Meaning ascending from Yerushalayim to Har Habayit is the difficult part. From Har Habayit into the Azara, it's not so difficult, or the possibility that the Azara can expand its boundaries anywhere on Har Habayit, so maybe that makes it that getting up to Har Habayit is sufficient. But that's the definition of Beit Shammai. Beit Hillel Omrim, Kol She'enu Yachol Le'achoz Biyado Shel Aviv. Anybody who can't hold his father's hand, Ve'alot Mirushalayim Lahar Habayit, and then go up from Yerushalayim to Har Habayit, She'ne'amar Shalosh Rigalim. This is what we said before, that the three holidays are defined as Shlosh Piyamim to come up, and also Shlosh Regalim. So Shlosh Regalim has impact here, that regal, or focus on the ability to walk on one's own, is a fundamental part of Aliyah the Regal. That affects Midoraita, some of these participants here, including the Chole, the Sagein, and the Chiger. But it also might affect here the Din of Chinuch, of the Katan. Beit Hillel says the same thing. If the child can walk on their own two feet, even though they have to hold their parents' hand, that's enough to bring them into the world of chinuch, because they can actually walk up there. Whereas Beit Shammai sees the father's walking enough for the son, as long as the son can be part and parcel of the father's walking up. But that's their definition. Now Rashi says, what is this? What are we talking about here, Ezu Katan? Sheheitilu chachamim al aviv, valimo l'chanecho b'mitzvot. The chachamim obligated his parents to be mechanechem in mitzvot. So this is interesting. This is Rashi l'shitato throughout Shas. Rashi throughout Shas believes that the mitzvah of chinuch is incumbent upon the parents, not upon the child themselves. The mitzvah of chinuch is an obligation of the parent. This has nafkaminot, Gemara in Brachot, Rashi discusses it, Gemara in Nidah, Rashi discusses it, Gemara in Sukkah, Megillah, in all those places, Rashi says that the obligation is on the parent to be mechaneich, the child. So because of that, it says here, when is it that the parent is obligated to bring the child up? When is the parent obligated to ensure that the katan participates in aliyah gila regil? And that's what the Chachamim are defining here in the Mishnah. So now, Tosafot, like in other places in Shas, argues on Rashi and says that the mitzvah of chinuch is not incumbent upon the parents, but rather on the child themselves. And that will also have nafkamino. It means that there's a rabbinic obligation on the child to perform the mitzvah. So the obligation is the child's obligation versus the parent's obligation. Now this has impact in terms of the korbanot. We said before, a katan, well, maybe what drove Rashi to say that the Mishnah over here is talking about riyah, just appearing, and not korbanot, is because the way Rashi views a katan. If Rashi views the obligation vis-a-vis a katan as being on the parent, not on the katan themselves. And therefore, when we're talking about here a katan being patur, we're talking about a katan being patur because they can't get themselves up to Yerushalayim. In terms of korban, there's no question about the katan and a korban. A katan's not obligated to bring a korban. A katan never brings a korban. The obligation's on the parent. So when we're talking about aliyah d'regel, the katan is exempted from appearing in the mikdash. That's what the Mishnah is talking about. The mitzvah of chinuch on the parent is to ensure that the child gets there. To say that they're going to have to bring a korban, why would you obligate the parent to bring a korban on behalf of the katan? That's not a type of chinuch that we're talking about. Chinuch is where you participate in the mitzvah. The obligation of the parent is to ensure the child participates in the mitzvah. By Rashi's definition, the child won't do that by a korban. On the other hand, Tosafot says that the mitzvah is incumbent upon the child themselves. Being incumbent upon the child themselves, you could understand why then the child might also bring a korban, even though he's not of age, because he would participate. It would be his korban. He's obligated, midrabanan, to do this. But then Tosafot runs into a problem and says, wait a minute, how can you obligate him, midrabanan, for something that is asur, midoraita? For instance, on Yom Tov. According to one who says you can't bring voluntary korbanot on Yom Tov, this katan is clearly bringing a voluntary korban. He's not bringing his own korban over here. He's bringing, we have to say, it's a nidava, and the chachamim obligate him to bring up a nidava. But maybe you can't bring that on the first day of Yom Tov. So Tosafot says, maybe you're right. Maybe the katan can't bring it on the first day of Yom Tov. He can bring it on the second day of Yom Tov. Tosafot says, we're going to see this in the Gemara coming up, that works well according to the one who says that the makeup days stand independently. Each day is an independent obligation, therefore he can bring it. But if you say that all the makeup days are making up for the first day, if you couldn't bring it on the first day, that means you can't bring it on the makeup days. Tell us about this. Maybe not. There's a difference between a katan and other people that cannot bring it on the first day. Someone can't bring it on the first day. For instance, they were not healthy, and they couldn't bring it on the first day. The reason they couldn't bring it is because the gavra, the individual themselves, is not ra'oi to bring the korban. Therefore, on the subsequent days, they can't make it up because they weren't ra'oi on the first day. As far as the katan is concerned, he is ready and willing to bring up the korban. The me'akev is not the katan himself. It's an exogenous din that you can't bring a korban nidava. Because it's an external din, and he was ra'oi to bring it on that day, it might be that he can make it up on the subsequent days. That's how Tosafot deals with this. Then he goes on to say, maybe you want to suggest that the isur to bring korbanot nidava on Yom Tov is only the Rabbanan. And since here the Rabbanan were obligating the child, the Rabbanan can override their isur. He says, don't say that, because the restriction against bringing a korban nidava, according to the one who says it's restricted on Yom Tov, is midoraita, is mina Torah. And therefore the Chachamim can't override a mitzvah mina Torah, and that's why I had to give you these alternative explanations. Tosafot in Psachim, and Daf Pechet, says otherwise. Tosafot over there says that you can actually violate a din deoraita for mitzvah of chinuch hakatan. It's a wild Tosafot. There he's talking about having sel beit avot, sel bayit. And over there, sel bayit, he says that the ketanim participate in the Korban Pesach, even though they're not obligated. How is it that we're feeding them Korban Pesach when they can't eat the Korban Pesach? They're not minyuav. They're not one of the people who is established to be a member of the group of the Korban Pesach. And he can't be. Even if you want him to be, he can't be because he's not obligated in the Korban Pesach. So how are we feeding a Korban Pesach to someone who is not obligated? Tosafot over there says, that even though there's a din by chinuch tanim that you cannot give them nevelot and trefot v'yadayim, you can't give them iser v'yadayim, nevertheless, when it comes to chinuch, that overrides the doraita, and you can give them korban pesach v'yadayim to eat, even though they're not obligated. If that's the case, that Tosafot, the Balei Tosafot and Pesachim would have to say, they could say the same thing here, is that in the midst of chinuch, we can override a din doraita, we can override the din that not to bring korbanei nedava on Yom Tov itself. So whether we hold like those that say you can't bring a korban nedava, or we say that tashlumim can be done any day, or whether you hold the other way, Tosafot clears up a way that the katan can do this. Again, this is Tosafot l'shitato, that number one believes our Mishnah is talking about not just appearing, but also a korban. Number two, Tosafot l'shitato, that chinuch is the obligation of the katan himself, and therefore the bringing of the korban is something that is an obligation of the katan, and we would expect him to bring a korban as far as chinuch. But Rashi, on the other hand, l'shitato, says, number one, our Mishnah is talking about riyah, simply appearing there. Number two, chinuch is the obligation of the parent, not of the child. And therefore, the question of the Mishnah might revolve around this issue of riyah appearing and not the korban, because you're talking about the parent's obligation. Why should the parent have to bring the korban on behalf of the child? That's not the mitzvah of chinuch. The mitzvah of chinuch is that the parent instructs the child to do something or do a mitzvah. And that might explain the difference between Rashi and Tosafot here in their views of the Mishnah. And again, Rashi agrees in the end that riyah involves bringing a korban. It just might be in the Mishnah he speaks about it being appearance because of the fact that the katan appears here in the Mishnah. Right, then Mishnah says, Beit Shammai umrim hariyah shtei kesef. The minimum amount that you bring for a korban olat riyah is shtei kesef, v'hachagiga, and the korban chagiga is a ma'ah kesef, is a ma'ah worth of kesef. Beit Hillel omrim, Beit Hillel says the other way, riyah ma'ah kesef, the riyah is the lesser amount, v'hachagiga shtei kesef, and the chagiga is two kesef. Now, shtei kesef means shtei ma'ot kesef, so versus one ma'ah. What you can see here between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel is where the emphasis is placed. Beit Shammai places the emphasis on the Olah versus the Shlamim. Meaning that focus towards Hashem and the gift to Hashem, you should give more to Hashem, or the minimum for Hashem is greater than the minimum of the Shlamim, which you are going to participate in. But then Beit Hillel has the opposite view. Again, Mat'im to their personalities. But Beit Hillel says that the Shlamim has a higher threshold, meaning that the minimum threshold for a Shlamim is higher than that for the Olat Riyah, because the Olah is not eaten, the Shlamim is eaten by the parties that come up. So here we have the ma'al kesef, or shtei ma'ot kesef, which are about a third of a dinar kesef. They're worth a third of a dinar kesef, six ma'al and a dinar. I'll give you a sense of what the size of this is. It's not so big, it's not a lot of money, but here is a minimum standard set up by the chachamim. Might be midoraita, most likely is only a din derabonon of setting up a minimum standard. Midoraita, any shiur would suffice. Now, the Gemara asks the question that the Bavli always asks when you have akol in the Mishnah, like Shaul was mentioning before. As soon as you say akol, latuye mai, must come to include something else. It's not coming to say everybody besides. It's coming to say akol. Akol must mean more. So what's more? So mai latuye mi shechetzio eved v'chetzio ben chorin. It's coming to teach you that someone who is a half eved, half ben chorin, is obligated in bringing the korban olat riyah or appearing in the Mikdash. How does it become a chetzio eved, chetzio ben chorin? Is an eved that's owned by partners, and one partner freed the eved. So when one partner freed the eved, he's half free, but the other partner held on to the eved knani, so that's why he's half eved. So he's now a half ben chorin, a half eved. Over here, the Gemara assumes that he is now obligated to come up and bring a korban riyah and appear in the Mikdash. Lervina damar, according to Lervina, says, mish chetzio eved, chetzio ben chorin, patur min riyah. He says that he's not obligated in riyah. Hakol l'atuyeh mai. So then what is he going to come to include? L'atuyeh chiger b'yom rishon, v'nit pashet b'yom sheni. He was injured. He was lame on the first day. He was unable to wake the walk up to the Mikdash on the first day. So he's exempt. But he's now healthy. Things slipped into place. He got some rest. Now he's able to walk on the second day. He will be chayav, according to Ravina. Gemara says, Ani chalaman damar kulan tashlumim zelaze, that each one of them is a tashlum for the other. The lashon of the Gemara is not so clear or crystal clear. What this means is that each day is an independent obligation. That if you don't do it on the first day, then the obligation shifts to the second day. If you don't do it on the second day, then the obligation shifts to the third day. For all up to 7 days of the Chag, each day stands as on its own. If you've already discharged your obligation, then it clears up all the other ones. But if you don't do it on any given day, the next day has that same obligation for 7 days. By Sukkot, it might actually reach into Shmini Atzeret as well. Then on the eighth day as well, you could bring it in as a makeup for the Chagigah that you were supposed to bring from the beginning of the Chag. So now, if that's the case, then when you didn't bring it on the first day because you were unable to walk up to Yerushalayim, so you didn't do it on the first day, your obligation is still there on the second day. The obligation just shifts day to day until you've discharged the obligation. But according to the one who says that it's always a makeup for the first day, I call that to him, this won't work over here, because since he was patur on the first day, then coming to the second day, there is no obligation. The obligation of the second day is only because you were obligated on the first day and you didn't do it. So now I have to make it up on the second day. Or the third day, I'm always making up what I didn't do on the first day. But the first day is the ikar obligation. So over here, if I'm patur on the first day, I can't obligate myself then, later on the subsequent days, because they're just a makeup for the first days. If that's the case, if the person's a chiger on the first day, then it's not relevant to talk about him being healthy on the second day. It's not going to matter at all, according to this Manda Amar. Now, this is also a machloket with regards to other items. We've discussed in the past, one of the main items has to do with Havdalah. Has the same question associated with it. It's a machloket between the Rosh and his Rebbe, the Maharam Mirutenberg, as to whether if one is patur from Havdalah on Motzei Shabbat or in Yom Rishon, can then make up Havdalah on the subsequent days. We know you're allowed to make Havdalah not just on Motzei Shabbat, you're allowed to make it all the way until Tuesday. Right? Since you can make it until Tuesday, what is... Right, Ad Bad Bichlah, including Tuesday itself. Since you can make it till then, is that because you missed it on Sunday or you missed it on Motzei Shabbat, therefore you can make it up? Or is that because the Iker Din of Havdalah applies all the way through? That will have a big nafka meaning, including for an onein. That's where they argue about it. For someone's patur from Abdullah because they're an onein on Motzei Shabbat. Now they're patur from Abdullah. Can they make Abdullah after that? Or are they obligated to make Abdullah? Were they patur at the ikar time and therefore everything else is tashlumim? Or is it that the obligation of Abdullah exists until Yom Shlishi? So this same type of machloket appears in other places. When you have makeup, whenever you have tashlumim, this is the chakira that you always ask. Is the tashlumim a makeup for the first day, for the first moment of the obligation? Or does that mean that all the days have the similar obligation, you just have to discharge it somewhere along the continuum? So according to that, hakol latuye mai. Then what does the kol come to include here? Latuye suma be'achat me'enav. It's come to tell you that someone who's blind in one eye is obligated to bring it up. Udulo ki hai tana. And it's not like this tana, meaning that there is a tana who says that person is patur when they are blind in one eye. So this Tana, our Tana, will not agree with that, the Tanya. Because we have a Braita, Yochanan ben Davai, Amar Mishum Rabbi Yehuda, Suma b'achat me'enav patur min ha-ri'iyah. Someone who's blind in one eye is patur from performing the ri'iyah, shenemar. Because it says, now this is very controversial about how to explain it. I'm going to read it, and then I'll come back and explain it. It says, Yir'eh, Yira'eh, or Yira'eh, Yir'eh. Derech sheba lirot, kach ba leiraot. Ma lirot b'shtei enav, af leiraot b'shtei enav. So I'm going to start here with Rashi's explanation of this. We have in the Pasuk reads, lo yira'eh fanai reikam, o lo yira'eh p'nei Hashem reikam. It may not appear before Hashem empty-handed. When you read the word yira'eh, there is nif'al, which is that you are to appear. But without nikudot, the word yud resh aleph hey is yir'eh, to see. So what the Gemara here says is there's a drasha based on the kri and the k'tiv. The kri is yira'eh, you must appear. The k'tiv is yir'eh, that you must see. So now, how do I work between them? So this is the way Rashi explains it, is that you have to look in the Bach. The Bach gives you the nikudot over here. So yir'eh k'tiv, it's written as yir'eh, v'karinan yira'eh, but we read it as yir'eh. Therefore, yir'eh kol zirchucha et pnei adon, they will see Hashem. Demashma she'adam ro et ha-shechina, that man sees the Shechina. Yira'eh kol zirchucha et pnei adon, mashma she'adon ba lirotcha, that the master comes to see you. Heki she'katuv riyatcha liriyato. The katuv connects between your seeing Hashem and Hashem seeing you. So therefore, kederech sheba lirotcha, just like when God comes to see you, Kach uba liraot mimcha. So too he appears to be seen by you. Ma lirotcha b'shnei enav. Just like when God appears to see you, he sees you with both of his eyes, figuratively. Avkam Leraot Min Adam, when he appears to be seen by man, Vishneyanav Shel Adam. It's also with the two eyes of Adam. So Rashi over here says that, first of all, Hashem comes and appears to see you. Number one. He also appears, Leraot, to be seen by man. He makes himself available to be seen by man. So Rashi does two things over here. He first of all says that the Yireh is defined first, then the Yireh. That's number one. Number two is, he says that it's talking about Hashem. Hashem appears, he comes to see you. And he also makes himself available so that you can see him. The Rabbeinu Tam says, I don't understand this Rashi. I disagree with this Rashi on two points. The first point is, God never comes. God does not appear and God doesn't come. God is everywhere. You come to see Hashem. Hashem doesn't come to see you. So you've got it all backwards, Rashi. God's not making himself available. He's not coming to see you. You're coming to see Hashem and appear before Hashem. It's the Adam that's doing the Ba, the coming, not Hashem that is doing the coming. That's number one. Number two is that you got the order wrong. Whenever we have something like this, Kri is first, and then the Ktiv. It should be Yireh, Yireh. It should be the appearance first, like it's written in the Pasuk, and then Yireh second. And therefore, the Rabbeinu Tam says, the way to read this is, Gariz Re'atam, Yireh, Yireh, Ma Lir'ot B'Shteyanav Shadam Baal Lehitra'ot Lifnei HaMakom B'Shteyanav Shel Makom. Just like man appears before Hashem to be seen by the two eyes of Hashem, Avadam Badir Ota Tamakom Bishteyanav, so too he comes to see Hashem with his two eyes. So first of all, you see the difference. It's the appearance first, then if Al first, then the Yireh second. Number two is, who's making the appearance? Who's coming? It's the Adam, not Hashem. So you appear before Hashem, Yireh before Hashem, in order that God sees you with his two eyes. Therefore, you also come to see Hashem with your two eyes. And then Rabbeinu Gershom, in Masechet Arachin, also brings down something similar to the Rabbeinu Tam. And then he brings an additional reasoning. And he says here, Vike Dari Mehocha. Some learned that from here. Vayikra Avram Shema Bekom Hahu Hashem Yireh. Asher Yemer Hayom Barer Hashem Yireh. So the Yireh and Yireh here is not based on the Kri and the Ktiv of the Pasuk, but rather based on the Pasuk by the Akedah, where Avram says that it's Har Hashem Yireh. And then, Asher Yemer Hayom Behar Hashem Yireh Klomar. So now what does that mean? Yireh et ha-makom ve'et ha-ba'im sham, v'yireh le-ba'im sham. That you not only have to come to see, Yireh Hashem Yireh, it's a place where you come to see Hashem and others, but it's also a place, Behar Hashem Yireh, a place to be seen. That's the connection between them. Just like other people need to see you, meaning that they have to see you with their eyes, two eyes, and Hashem sees you with two eyes. So it's over here. When you will come there to see, you have to be able to see with your two eyes what everything that's going on over there. So that's the way the Rabbeinu Gershom explains it in Masechet Arachin. So you have three different approaches to here. There's one other approach, which is that we learn it out of Suma B'Chad Meina from this bright over here. But leaving that aside, those are the reasons for Yireh, Yireh, or Yireh, Yireh, the Lermud over here. Kederach Shebali Ra'ot, Kach Ba Le'ra'ot. Or according to the way that the Rabbeinu Tam has the Girsa is, Ma Le'ra'ot, to mean when you come to be seen by Hashem, so too, when the Ra'ot, when you appear to see Hashem, you also have to see Him B'Shtei Einav. So that's the Limud here, that Asuma B'Chad Me'Einav is not obligated in the Re'iyah, but our Tana disagrees. Our Tana says, Akol Le'atuye, even Asuma B'Chad Me'Einav. That's one possibility. Ibai Fema, Lo'olam Kida'amre Mi'ikora. No, then we have another option. So we went through the option here, giving all different possibilities. Chetzio Eved, Chetzio Ben Chorin. Then we moved, well, what happens if you think that's Patur, like Ravina? Then we moved over to Chiger B'Yom Rishon and got healthy on the second day. Then we said, well, what according to the one who says that everything's Tashlumim de Rishon? We said, Suma Be'achat Menav. What about the Breita? We disagree with that Breita. Now Ibai Dema goes back to the original assumption. What was the original assumption? That it's talking about a Chetzio Eved and a Chetzio Ben Chorin. The kakasha lecha had Ravina. What about Ravina's statement that he is pator? Lokasha. Kan kemishna rishuna, kan kemishna achuna. This is like the original position and the later position of the Mishnah. The Tanan. We have a Mishnah. So Mishnah is always quoted in this context. Of chetzio eved chetzio ben chorin. Mi shechetzio eved chetzio ben chorin. Ovedet rabo yom echad vedetzmo yom echad. He works for himself one day and he works for his master, meaning the other master for the other day. Divrei Beit Hillel. Amrulahem, Beit Shammai says to them, Tikantem et rabo. You took care of his master. I mean, his master is getting the work that he expected. He has a half ownership in his eved. He's getting his half work done. He gets whatever he owns, he's getting. Aval betatzmo lo tikantem. You didn't fix him. You didn't take care of the eved himself. The eved now is a limbo state that's going to cause him a tremendous amount of problems, which is lishta shivcha inu yachol, to marry a shivcha. He cannot do. If he was a full-fledged eved kanani, he could marry a shivcha kananit without any problem. But now that he's a chatzio ben chorin, he can't marry the shivcha kananit. But chorin inu yachol, he can't marry a woman, a regular Jewish woman, because he's half eved. So now he's stuck. He's stuck in a position where he can't marry. He can't marry a shivcha kananit because he's half ben chorin. He can't marry a bat chorin because he's half eved. So livatel. Okay, so what are you going to say? That's it. He won't get married. Hallo lo nivra olam elo l'priria v'ribya. The world was only created for the mitzvah p'riyavya. Shinemar. Pasuk in Yishayahu. Lo tohu v'ra'a l'shevet yitzara. God did not create the world to be desolate. He created it in order for it to be populated, for it to be inhabited. Elam ipnei tikun olam, for tikun olam, in order to solve this problem. Kofim et rabo vosoto ben chorin. We force his master to free him. Vokotev lo shtar chetzi damav. He sets up a promissory note to pay him back for freeing him. We tell his master, you're going to have to free him. He'll post it as a note, meaning that he's going to be obligated to pay the master to win his freedom. But we're going to force him to free him immediately on that promissory note that he'll pay him back for freeing him now. Because then he'll be a ben chorin and he'll be able to marry and accomplish peru urvu. V'chazru beit hillel, l'roch k'divrei beit shammai. And beit hillel then changed their minds to paskin like divrei beit shammai. So what the Gemara says is you have Mishnah Rishonah, where beit hillel says he remains a chatzi eved and a chatzi ben chorin. Mishnah Achronah is when beit hillel changed their mind. They recanted on their position, and they agreed with Beit Shammai to say that Chatzio ben Chorin and Chatzio Eved is freed. Now, the way Rashi and Tosafot read this is that even though it's not so logical in the Mishnah, they say Hakol Tu Yemai. Hakol comes to include what? Hakol comes to include even a Eved that's Chatzio Eved, Chatzio ben Chorin. That is like the Mishnah Achrona. The Mishnah Achrona who says he's going to be freed no matter what. So since he's going to be freed, now that he's a chetzu eved, chetzu ben chorin, it's not relevant because we're going to force him to free him. So he's a free man. He's chayav in re'iyah because that's going to be his end game. So that's the Mishnah Achrona. Later on in the Mishnah, it says, avadim she'enam mishachrayim. Avadim that are not freed. That's where Ravina learns out that an eved that is chatzi free and chatzi not free does not obligate him because he's not free. It says here you have to be an eved that is freed in order to be chayav. That means the latter half of the Mishnah that says that he is patur was talking according to the Mishnah Rishona. According to the first time when Beit Hillel said he remains a chetzu eved, chetzu ben chorin, that's why I'm a Mishnah Rishonah. That's the way Rashi reads it. That's the way Tosafot reads it. It's the easiest way to read it into the Mishnah. On the other hand, there are others like the Rambam in the Perush Mishnayot who reads it the opposite way around. He says, it doesn't make sense that the Mishnah here is out of order. It should be that the first half of the Mishnah is talking about Mishnah Rishonah, and the second half is talking about Mishnah Achronah. And then you're going to have to define the logic just the opposite, which is, Hakol Atuye comes to include chetzu ben chorin, chetzu eved, is when Beit Hillel said he stays that way. Since that's his permanent status, they say he is chayav, because that's going to remain his status. Nothing's going to change now. And his Ben Chorin side is chayav. And basically the Chachamim said that in terms of his Abdut side, we're going to tell him that he's obligated to do it. On the other hand, in the Mishnah Achrona, which says that we're going to force him to free him, since he will end up as a free person, right now he's not there. So we're going to say he's patur until he gets that point where he's a free person, because that's where his end game is. He's really going to get there. So that's the way that Rambam reads the Mishnah, but by doing that, he has the Mishnah Rishonah and Achronah being order in the Mishnah of explaining the different pieces of the Mishnah. All right, just to speak, we've done this before. We spoke about this in the Gemara in Pesachim, as well as a little bit in the Gemara in Arachin. Over here, the Gemara mentions the mitzvah period rivya, and then quotes a pasuk, not from the Torah, pru or vo, but the pasuk of lo tovu v'ra l'shevet yitzara. The question for all the Rishonim and all the Poskim is, what is the connection between the two? Are these two separate mitzvot? There's a mitzvah pru or vo, and there's a mitzvah of lo tovu v'ra l'shevet yitzara, meaning that these are completely independent mitzvot, and pru or vo might apply to some people, and lo tovu v'ra might apply to others. Or is lo tovu v'ra just coming to tell you that the mitzvah pru rivya is such a fundamental mitzvah? It comes basically to enhance the core mitzvah of prur or vu. Tosafot brings down both deyot over here. He brings down a deyah. He favors here the deyah that when we're asking over here prur or vu, we mean literally prur or vu. and that the mitzvah over here is stronger because of lo tov vira. It's a strong mitzvah because lo tov vira enhances the mitzvah pruravu. On the other hand, you could believe that, for instance, the mitzvah pruravu, which women are pturot from, or maybe Eved Kenani is pator from, maybe they'll still be chayavim in the mitzvah lo tov vira. Maybe there's a separate mitzvah that they would be obligated in that would obligate them even though they're pturim from pruravu. That would be a big nafkamina between whether you read it as a separate mitzvah or you read it as a single mitzvah. Same might be true with a nachri. Is a nachri chayav in pruravu? Is pruravu a mitzvah and lo tov a separate mitzvah? Maybe they're a chayavim in lo tov, not in pruravu. Or lo tov will come to enhance the mitzvah pruravu and they're not chayavim in the mitzvah pruravu. In addition, you could argue that the nature of the mitzvot is different. The Aruch HaShulchan argues this, that the nature of the mitzvah pruravu is different than the mitzvah lo tov vira. The mitzvah pruravu is an obligation on the individual to procreate and to produce. Lo tov vira is a more generic, general obligation on mankind as a whole. And therefore, the obligation of pruravu, which devolves upon the individual, the Aruch HaShulchan says, that only applies to Klal Yisrael. The obligation of lo tov vira, which is an obligation on mankind as a whole, on the world, to basically populate and inhabit the world, that mitzvah applies equally to a Yisrael and a Nachri. It's just, it's a obligation, a generic, general obligation, not an obligation that devolves upon the individual by themselves. In addition, Tosfot asks over here, why don't we just say, ase doche lotase over here. He has a lotase to marry a shivcha kenani from his ben chorin side. He has an ase to perform pruravu. Why don't we say, ase doche lotase? So Tosafot over here says, we don't say, I say, doche lo tase, when, first of all, efshar the kayim shnehem, when you can accomplish both of them. He has the ability to accomplish both of them if we free him. If we take him through the process of freeing him, he will get there. So then we don't allow you to violate it. In addition, he says, we only say, I say, doche lo tase, when it happens simultaneously. The accomplishment of the assay happens at the same moment as the lo tase. That's not true over here. Because, in terms of the assay of pruravu, you don't accomplish that until you have full biyah, and he is motzi shech vadzera, because that's the only way you can have pruravu. Other than it being violation of arayot, or violation of lo yeh kadesh, that's already behara. That's already just with contact, with being together with the woman, that would be enough. So he's already in violation of the law before he ever accomplishes the assay. Since it's not simultaneous, it does not override over here. The last thing Tosafot discusses over here, which is also very interesting, is there is an isur in the Torah to free an Eved Kenani. So now we're going to force his master to free him and violate an isur in order that this individual can accomplish a mitzvah. We know from the beginning of the Gemara in Shabbat, we don't ask someone else to do an Aveira Kala to protect someone else from an Aveira Gidola. So we don't say to you, go scrape out the bread from the oven to save your friend from an isur of Afiyah in Shabbat. Because why should you violate an isur Kal to benefit your friend? So Tosafot says, why don't we say the same thing over here? Why should I free the Eved in order that he can accomplish the mitzvah? Now I have to know Aveira to accomplish it. So Tosafot makes a distinction here, which is very important. He says, in the Gemara in Shabbat, the guy is a pusheya. He baked. He's the one who created the problem on Shabbat. It's his problem. He created the problem. He's got to deal with the problem. You don't have to do an Aveira to save him from his problem. Over here, the Eved Kenani did nothing wrong. He didn't do anything wrong that put him into this predicament. Right, it's the circumstances that force him in this way. And therefore, over there, we are going to say to you, do the Aveira, the lighter Aveira, in order that he can accomplish this great mitzvah, Pruravu. And Tosafot again says that that's his understanding of Pruravu here, Lo Tov Vira, tells you that it's a super mitzvah. Since it's a super mitzvah, therefore we allow you to do a mitzvah kala to accomplish the greater mitzvah of Pruravu. But if it was just a equal level mitzvah, we wouldn't say to you, do a violation in order for him to accomplish the mitzvah. So the two of those together create an opportunity where you can do an Aveira Kala in order to facilitate him doing the greater mitzvah. We find examples of that in the Gemara in Brachot with regards to freeing an Eved to make a minion. So over there, the Gemara says it's an Isur. The Gemara there says either mitzvah shiny or mitzvah derabim shiny. A mitzvah is different or a mitzvah of the public or for the public good is different. So Tosafot is saying here too, the mitzvah of pruravu is such a great mitzvah that it falls under that category where we say you can do the Aveira in order to accomplish a much greater mitzvah. You could argue here that it's mitzvah is shiny only when it's a very important mitzvah, or you could argue here mitzvah derabim shiny, depends what the girsa is in the Gemara Brachot, that this is a mitzvah derabim because lo tov vira makes it a broader mitzvah, not just the mitzvah of the individual. Right now the Gemara continues, chutz mecheresh shoteh v'katan. Tani cheresh dumia de shoteh v'katan. The Mishnah places cheresh, shoteh, and katan in one grouping. Ma shoteh v'katan. Why are shoteh and katan exempted over here? Delav bnei deya. They are not able to comprehend. They are not of either age by the katan or of the sound mind by the shoteh in order to grasp what's going on. Af cheresh delav bar deyahu. So to the cheresh that we're speaking at over here is someone who does not grasp because he's deaf and mute. Therefore, the assumption of the Gemara is that he's not understanding. He does not have the intellectual capability to deal with this. As Rashi says over here, kimlehu derabonan. The Rabbanan, from their understanding, from the empirical evidence, said that they're dummy. Sheino shomeya v'eno medaber d'la b'nei de'inah. If he's both deaf and mute, that he's considered to be lacking in de'ah. Now this obviously has nafkaminot in the modern day age where it's clear that that's not the case. I mean that if we can prove that that's not the case, then if they are b'nei de'ah, maybe they should be chayavim in the mitzvot. And that's way most of the modern poskim, like Rav Shlomo Zalman and others, deal with both shoteh and cheresh. That's why I wanted to defer the discussion from the Mishnah to here, which is that the shoteh that we're speaking about is not necessarily a shoteh where they're somehow disabled or they're not a person who has full cognitive abilities. But as long as they can understand what they're doing and understand the mitzvot, that might be enough to be b'nei de'ah in this context. B'nei de'ah's definition is not simply black and white. There are areas of gray or shades of gray in between where we have to deal with it, and that's basically what the Gemara lays out over here. The Chachamim say, Cheresh, oh, he's definitely not B'nai De'ah. But if he is a B'nai De'ah, then all of a sudden it changes the dynamic. And the same will be true of the Shoteh. What the definition of a Shoteh will be if he's lacking in De'ah. Lacking in De'ah, that we have to check out. What is the threshold? What's the definition? And again, in the modern era, that has changed significantly from in the past because there are different ways to educate and ways to enhance the ability for people to perform these days that were not available in the time of the Chachamim. All right, the Gemara says, V'kamash malan kitznan. And this, what we just learned here, is telling us, like we saw in the Mishnah, Cheresh shedibru Chachamim b'kol makom. The Cheresh that the Chachamim speak about anywhere you see it in Chazal is she'enu shomeya ve'eno midaber. Ha, midaber ve'eno shomeya, shomeya ve'eno midaber, chayav. If he was to speak and not hear, he was only deaf, or eno midaber, but he is shomeya, but then, if he's only mute and not deaf, chayav, he would be chayav. Umar says, Tanina had the Tanu Rabbanan. We have a Mishnah that supports this understanding of the Chachamim. Hamidaber v'enu shomeya zehu cheresh. Shomeya v'enu medaber ze'ilein. Someone who speaks and cannot hear, that's a cheresh. That's someone who's deaf. Well, what's a person who's mute? V'enu medaber, someone who is hearing but not speaking, that's an ilein. Zev zeh harien kepichim. Both of these defined terms, cheresh and ilaim here, are both considered to be full-fledged members of society, bnei deyah. Bechol divrehem, and anything they do. Umimai dimidaber v'enu shomeya zehu cheresh. How do I know that someone who speaks and doesn't hear is called a cheresh? Shomeya v'enu midaber zeh ilaim. Dichtei, because the pasuk in Tehillim says, v'ani kecheresh lo eshma, uki ilaim lo yiftach piv. So you see that ilaim is associated with not opening one's mouth, and cheresh is associated with not hearing. So that's interesting. It happens to be that here the Mishnah calls cheresh someone who cannot hear but can speak. That goes against the definition that we just said here. But it's clear from that Mishnah that it's true that that person is considered to be a bar chiyuva or b'nen deyah. And therefore, if that's the case, in our Mishnah, you have to be talking about a case where it's not someone is either shomei or midaber. It has to be where he's lacking in both of them. And that's why he's not a bar dat over here. V'ibay deyma, how do you know that cheresh and ilaim are given in this definition? Because it says, Gedam Rimshe, the colloquial saying, which is, Ishtakel Milulei, that his words have been taken away. So Ishtakel Milulei, ilaim is an acronym for Ishtakel Milulei. His words have been taken from him, and that's what it means to be mute. Now, Midaber, Venu Shomea, Shomea Venu Midaber Chayav, Baha Tanyo, don't we have a Braita, Midaber Venu Shomea, Shomea Venu Midaber Patur? So we have a Braita that goes against what we just concluded here, that from our Mishnah they would be Chayavim, that's the inference from our Mishnah. Now we have a Braita that says they are Turim. So Amravina, Vitei Marova, Chasurei Mechsra. Our Mishnah is missing some words here. V'achiktani, Hakol Chayavim B'Riya U'B'Simcha. Everybody's Chayav, not only in Riya, but we're also talking about the Shamei Simcha over here. Chutz, Mecheresh HaMedaber V'Einu Shomea, Shomea V'Einu Medaber, Shepatur Min Riya, that he is patur from the riyah. Vafo pisha patur min riyah, even though he's exempted from riyah, chayav b'simcha. Then it moves on to what is our Mishnah now. V'she'enu lo shemeyav lo medaber, v'shoteh v'katan, which is the cheresh shoteh v'katan. In our Mishnah, patur af min ha-simcha. not only are they patur from the obligation of riyah, they're also paturim from the obligation of simcha. So here the Gemara bifurcates the chiyuvim and says, by simcha, they're chayavim. The mute and the deaf are chayavim in simcha. When it comes to riyah, they are exempted. Now, when it comes to a cheresh, enu medaber, enu shumei, he's both deaf and mute. In that case, he's patur not only from the riyah, but he's also patur from the simcha as well. So why are they patur min a simcha? Because whole p'turim, we call them mitzvot amurot p'turah. This is no different than any other mitzvah which they are p'turim. Cheresh, shel deva, katan, are p'turim from all mitzvot in the Torah because they are not b'nei deya. So that's the way that the Gemara defines it. It's interesting because women also have this same definition. Women are chayavot in simcha. They're not chayavot in riyah. So the Rishonim discuss why wasn't the woman brought into this story over here because she's the same status over here. The Rishonim give different answers. Like Tosafot says, the Mishnah doesn't want to backtrack. It's in one topic. It doesn't want to insert different things in the middle of its topics. So en okanami, it's true, but it's confusing. If you're trying to memorize or get a Mishnah down pat, to have it move around like that is very difficult. So it's true, but they didn't move it up there. Now the Gemara says, Tanya nami hochi, akol chayavim biriyah, ubisimcha, verbraita that supports that understanding that everyone is chayav in riyah and simcha. So we're dealing with both types of korbanot, chutz, with the exception of hamidaber ve'enu shomea, shomea ve'enu midaber, p'turim min riyah. A person who's deaf only, or mute only, is patur from riyah. Afa pi shomtur miyah, chayav b'simcha. Ve'enu shalo shomea, lo midaber, v'shote v'katam p'turim af min simcha. Ho p'turim, mikol mitzvot v'mot v'atra. Maishna, linyan riyah de p'tirei. Maishna linyan simcha de michayve. Look, as far as the cheresh shel teva katan is concerned, they're patur in both cases. They're patur in all the mitzvot. So patur miriyah, patur misimcha, you don't have to come up with any explanation. But for the deaf only and the mute only individual who is chayav in simcha, patur min riyah, why would you separate between them? Maishnalin in riyah de p'tirei, what's the difference by riyah that they are p'turim? Maishnalin in simcha de michayve, what's the difference by simcha that they're chayav? So the inyan, riyah, gamar riyah, riyah mihakel. They learn out riyah, riyah from hakel, dichtiv. Hakel et ha'am, ha'nashim v'nashim v'ataf, uchtiv. It says there, bevo kol Yisrael le'ra'ot, when they come and they appear. V'hata minolon, and how do you know by hakel that the deaf and the mute individual is patur over there? Dichtiv, l'man yishme'u, o l'man yilmidu, in order that they can hear and that they can learn, learning in the sense of teaching, we'll see later on. So therefore, even if you're deaf only or mute only, you're going to be exempted from hakel because you can't perform l'man yishme'u or l'man yiru. Now we have a hekesh of riyah from the leiraot that's found by hakel to the yeraeh that is found over here by riyah. That gzeirah shava tells us, just like your patur by hakel, you're also patur over here by the riyah. So that's v'tanya. L'man yishme'u prat l'midaber v'enu shomea. L'man yishme'u comes to exclude someone who can speak but is deaf. L'man yilmidu comes to exclude prat l'shomea ve'enu midaber, someone who hears but does not speak. So therefore, we have an exemption by hakel. That exemption by hakel is carried over to riyah or lat riyah. That's why they are p'turim by riyah. As far as simcha is concerned, there is no exemption. Since no exemption, and they are by default chayavin in kol mitzvot haTorah, unless you find a specific miut, they are chayavin. When they're only deaf or only mute, they're chayavin in kol mitzvot. So by simcha, they're chayav. By Riyah, we have a specific meal that comes out of Hakel. That's why they are Turim. Okay, we're going to stop over here. 11 lines down on Daf Gimel Amud Aleph.